Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Tuesday, May 7th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Also with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so since Andrew's on the show, I'm sure all of you know at least one of our topics is going to be security related. And the thing we want to talk about today is passwords. Or I keep calling them passphrases, so people will use more than one word at a time, and maybe they'll be a tiny bit safer than just typing the word password everywhere, but I don't know. Maybe. So far, it's not a thing. I keep hoping, but I'm an optimist, and we'll see how that goes. So, basically, there's this article in Fast Company that Charlotte wrote up for us this morning, talking about passwords and what you could do to not have to use passwords the way we think of them now anymore, finding a way to evolve away from that. And part of what the article talks about is different ways that you could do this. And part of what they want to do is, or at least part one of the options that's being pursued, is by biometrics and using biometrics to prove that you are who you say you are.
So that's interesting to me, right? Because there's actually several things that I'm happy that we are talking about here. But we'll start with biometrics, right? Because Apple is using biometrics on many of their devices, right? With Touch ID and or Face ID.
Yes.
But I don't see the way Apple is implementing those. I don't mean to talk about biometrics in general, but the way Apple is implementing them, both in terms of the way the hardware, but specifically the way the software works, these are convenience features, not security features. Right. Now, anything that makes security more convenient probably also increases security, because if you're someone that can't be bothered with a passcode on your iPhone, but you could deal with Touch ID or Face ID, well, now your iPhone just got more secure because of this convenience. And the reason I say that Apple is using biometrics as convenience, not security, is because there is always the passcode as the final step, right? You are essentially doing your whatever, face or fingerprint, in lieu of entering the passcode that you also have.
Right.
And when something goes wrong with your Touch ID or Face ID, or too much time has elapsed, right? We're Apple's software is treating Touch ID and Face ID as less secure than your passcode. We could argue all day long whether or not that's actually true, but the way the software treats it, it is. Like, that is the reality of the way iOS works. It's like, well, if we decide for whatever reason, time, you turned your phone off, any of these, you know, factors, that we need to be the most secure we can, the answer is you have to type your passcode. And that's very interesting to me, because it's teaching people that biometrics are less secure than passcodes.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be that, you know, in some scenario that may be true, right? Like, your fingerprint could be used while you're asleep or otherwise not conscious, you know, dead being one of those things. Right. So, but it's just, it's interesting to me that we're talking about getting away from passwords and using biometrics when the most popular implementation of this teaches us the opposite.
Right. Because one of the things that's supposed to make biometrics more secure is, for example, if you're talking about fingerprints, my fingerprint is different from Dave's, is different from Andrew's. And so I can only get into my stuff. Dave can only get into his. Andrew can only get into his.
And sometimes we can't get into any of ours because our fingers are sweaty and like,
right.
But, you know, a fingerprint, I could describe my fingerprint to everyone on this show, and I think very few, perhaps probably none, but if I'm wrong, very few of you would be able to take that information and use it in a way to get into, say, my iPad, which still has a Touch ID sensor on it. You all have my picture, and yet none of you, again, I'll say none, but we'll put an asterisk there, none of you could use that picture to get into my iPhone, mm-hmm. right? But if I were to state my passcode here, 100% of you could use that to get into my iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that, like there, we've just created this sort of cognitive dissonance here where it's like, well, wait, we're being taught that like the way the iPhone acts, it's like the password's the most secure thing. But I just gave an example that would challenge that. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting. These are the things that Dave's brain likes to think about.
So. Well, another thing that I think is interesting about this is that they do, password managers are brought up. We've talked about them before. Andrew and I've had this conversation. So what did you think, Andrew, of some of the other solutions that they offered? I mean, one of the ones they offered right away was for a lot of people, because biometrics generally will require additional hardware. Right. You had to have the phone mm-hmm. with the silver ring around the home button or because there was additional hardware in that home button to read your fingerprint. So, you know, biometrics isn't the easiest solution for a lot of people, but password managers might be. So what did you think of the solutions offered in this article, Andrew?
Interesting. I know I wrote last year about this API that was being considered. It's called WebAuthn, mm-hmm. and it would basically let people use things they already have, like their camera, USB keys, their biometrics to log into any website. Mm-hmm. So that this is just not really replacing passwords, I don't think, although maybe it could. It's just an extra alternative.
Yeah. And there's been a few attempts at something like that where there's sort of a universal login system. So what's what I'm thinking of? There was one here in Portland. There was a company that started that was doing sort of an OpenID kind of a thing where you would like if your website used the hooks to get into this authentication system, you could just use this authentication system. It was sort of like, you know, login with Facebook or login with Google, but your data and not some creepy third-party company that you know is mining you, and that's their business model. So that was part of what made that an interesting thing. And we hear more about security regularly. You know, we've talked about how Apple makes it part and parcel of their feature announcements, but also in the rise of two-factor and different things like that. And one of the things that they mention in this article is logins that don't have passwords. So you set up your email address with some service, and when you want to log in, I have a couple services that do this. When you want to log in, you say, this is my email address, and then they email you a link, and you click on the link, and that link has some sort of authorization magic in it, and now you're signed into the thing.
Right, and, no password necessary. Yeah.
Right. And those are kind of nifty. But I've had one where somehow, I mean, it all requires that I get sent an email. So
well, and that no
think
one
about all the ways that goes awry.
To your email.
True.
Yeah.
But right. I mean, like if somebody has your email password, that whole thing sort of falls apart and
right.
you may not even know that someone is reading your email, right? Like it's possible given that we can all get our email on multiple devices, if someone has our email password, there would be signs that something was amiss, but it's not like you can only check your email from one place ever.
No, right.
We've all got multiple devices logged in, which means there could be another one that's not you. Mm-hmm. So,
but even to, you know, I had one that went to junk one time and, you know, it got filtered out way before I ever saw it. So I was like, hey, it never got here. Or, it didn't end up in junk, but it just took like an hour to get through for some reason, you know, and I'm trying to log in right now. And so in some ways, that one is sort of inconvenient. I wish it weren't because I like the idea that there are easier ways to make this stuff happen. Obviously, a password manager is one of those ways, I think. And the article says this was the thing, Dave, that you brought up before the meeting, before we were started recording. The article says most people don't use a password manager. And I said,
I can't believe Glenn would say that. And it was Glenn Fleischman that wrote this. Glenn has been in our spheres for a very long time. He wrote for Macworld for a long time. Yeah. Yes. And Wired and many, many, many other places. And is a dear friend, but he's actually probably right. Writing to Fast Company's audience, he's probably right that most people don't use a password manager, but
right.
Speaking to this audience here, I believe that to be utterly false, because if you're using iOS or macOS, you are using a password manager.
Right. Because if you're using that little iCloud keychain, that's a password manager. And if you let it suggest for you, you win.
It's a pretty good password manager. Like, there are reasons that I choose to use, you know, a third party one, but iCloud Keychain is totally fine. When I'm advising clients, I, 100% of the time, I say, just use iCloud Keychain. Mm-hmm. Unless they then say to me, well, but I want to share this password with my husband, or I have a team of people that we need to share. Right. Okay, cool. You're now beyond novice, and your needs are beyond novice. I don't mean, you know, that using one password means you're a novice, or using iCloud Keychain means you're a novice. It's just that your needs are similar to those of a novice user, and that's okay. Apple again has done a pretty good job, and those of you that listen to me know that I'm not typically an Apple apologist here, but I think Apple has done a pretty good job of just making a password manager perfectly well integrated into everyday life. It's you know, it syncs without you having to do a thing. So you type a password in on your iPhone, it says, do you want me to remember this? You say yes, you go to your iPad or your Mac, and it has that password to enter automatically. My only complaint would be with Safari 12, they made it so that 12.1, whatever the latest and greatest is, although I put an asterisk on greatest, because when iCloud Keychain enters my password, it automatically submits. And I don't like that. I went with it for a little while because I'm, you know, like, oh, change. Okay. I understand. You know, I'm a human, so I'm resistant to change by nature. Fine. But, you know, I can't check the box that says, please leave me logged in all the time. And I'm sure Ricky Mondello at Apple will tell me, because he's the one that sort of spearheads this on the Safari team there. I'm sure he'll tell me, well, you don't need it to remember your login. That's less secure. And I would say, you're right. But the convenience of staying logged in is about more than just bypassing the password prompt. There's a lot of websites where I might have reports up, like a live report on something like, say, MailChimp. Yeah. And if it doesn't leave me logged in, now I have to go back through all the steps, not just the automated one of typing my password, but all the steps of setting that report back up on my screen. It's like, nope, I'm responsible, Dave. Let me do this.
Yes.
So yeah, I think Apple is doing a very good job of making sure that Glenn is wrong when he says that most people don't use a password manager. Like, I mean, think about where we are now versus where we were, I mean, even just 3 years ago. Like, it's fantastic. Well,
even last year when they announced that iOS 12 would have the paste from the text that you got for two-factor or what, you know, all of that stuff, like, that works really well. And opening up that password slot for other password managers. So if you use something else, you don't have to use iCloud Keychain, just so you can make it more convenient. You can use whatever one you were already using, which is nice.
It's nice. I agree.
Yeah.
No, I think it's great. I also kind of wanted to circle back on the whole the prior discussion about using a password versus using, you know, the biometrics versus using, say, you know, something that you have like a token or whatever. It, really, those are not necessarily mutually exclusive things. I mean, they are for like logging into TMO. You only have one option, right? It's a password, but they don't have to be. Many instances of security, I mean, we talk about two-factor authentication all the time, but you could have three-factor, right? Because there's something, you know, that's your password, right? Something you are, that's your biometrics of your phone. Your eye or your face or your fingerprint or whatever that is. And then there's something you have, which is like what we're essentially doing with a lot of these two-factor things, where you know you're running an app on your phone that's generating a a code that changes every 30 seconds, or you have some of your banks might give you like what they call a token. It's such a bad term. It's a it's a little dingus device that you hang on your keychain, and every 30 seconds a new code just magically appears on it, and until the battery runs out, it is now synced with your bank magically. It's not magic. It's just doing a calculation based on time. but you and your bank are doing the same calculation. And in theory, no one else has access to that, including you, right? You don't know what calculation it's doing.
Yeah.
So having two or even three of those at the same time now does increase security, you know, quite a bit. So instead of saying, I'm going to unlock my iPhone with either my passcode or my fingerprint, it's just a software switch for Apple to say, do you want to turn on two-factor authentication to unlock your phone? So you have to do both. That starts getting really interesting. You know, if we want to increase security, just like to open, you know, open the discussion. So we're just seeing it from all the angles.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
And we would like to hear from you about your thoughts on passwords possibly going away in favor of one of these other options where you don't have to remember a thing or have a password manager that fills in for you. You can do that at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can email observations at macobserver.com, and you can always leave a comment in the show notes. The other thing I wanted to talk about today was yesterday's show. Just for a minute. You may have heard a couple bleeps and bloops yesterday during the recording of the podcast. And that's because Andrew, as we said yesterday, had joined us from his phone, and in the middle of the conversation we were having, like I believe this is what we call peak TDO, Dave. I might need a ruling. In the middle, in the middle of a conversation we were having about journalism on TDO, like journalism versus spoilers, like digging in and finding the thing that nobody else knows versus just getting to be surprised. That's what we were talking about. Andrew gets a robocall and gets kicked out of the recording because he's on his phone. So
I just want to add some context for anybody that doesn't know. Andrew had joined this show from his phone, but not as a phone call. He had joined it via an app that we use called Discord. It's a voice over IP app. So he was talking, but if he had been on his phone and another phone call had come in, it would not have interrupted it. But the issue is that when you're using a VoIP app on your phone, or at least the issue with Discord specifically is when you're using that app, and it may be true with other VoIP apps or not, and a phone call comes in, it completely ends that scenario that your VoIP app is doing and presents you with this phone call that you may or may not want to take.
And it was a robocall, which is a thing Andrew and I have talked about more than once. So eventually he made it back. And
yes, I mean, it basically just, you know, ripped me right out of Discord. And I sent an explicit message to Kelly and I was able to join, but Because of the way iOS works, I couldn't do anything.
Right.
There are two different call screens you get. If your phone is not active, meaning you're not on it, you get a call and it'll give you a decline button or an accept button. But if you're using it like I was, the only option you get is slide to answer. Mm-hmm. So I could only tap the power button to mute the sound and then just stare at it until it was done.
Wait it out.
Even if you tap the power button a second time, that doesn't dismiss it. I mean, I realize the damage was already done, but the delay was there. I thought you could tap the power button a second time in that scenario.
I'll call Andrew later and we'll find out.
We'll figure it out.
Because I want to know
right now.
But this caught. Andrew, tell us about the rest.
Yeah, it just gave me this idea. I wish, like in a future version of iOS, a phone call would just come in like a banner, like every other notification, and I can just swipe it away instead of it, you know, taking over my screen.
Mm-hmm. Or you get the option, like if you swipe it away, it goes to voicemail, but you could answer from that notification if you so desire.
Yeah. And then this kind of sparked Kelly to have this whole different like conversation, and now we're going to write an editorial about it. So it's going to be pretty good.
So the thing about it to me is that in Andrew's case in particular, his phone decided the most important thing to happen at that moment was you have a phone call. And anybody who has an... Okay, I know the plural of anecdote is not data, but everyone I know who has a phone, generally when it rings, that is not the thing they want it to be doing. Why didn't you text me? There's a deep sigh and an eye roll, you know, different things like that. So, like, nobody really enjoys getting calls anymore. And part of that is because most robocalls.
But, yes.
calls from actual people are generally fine. But it doesn't happen near like it used to. Like, just in general.
Yeah.
Because you can send a text. Mm-hmm. Or there's a Facebook message. Or there's a whatever. You know, and people have lots of other ways to communicate using an iPhone, but it's not always a phone call. Like, I've joked with people before. Did you know there's an app you can get for your phone and you can use it for like live voice chat with another person? It's so cool. Check this out. And I've been like kidding about it, but I'm only sort of kidding because it's like nobody uses that anymore. Like, it blows people's minds when I tell them you can take that out of the dock. You're not using it. I know you're not. You know you're not. Don't leave it down there all the time. Because you're not making phone calls. When a call comes in, you can answer it. You don't have to have the phone app open for that. Take it out and put it somewhere else and then put messages down there or something, you know, that you use all the time. So that was the thing that got me started was, like, if Apple made that change, which doesn't sound like a huge change, you know, instead of the whole screen lighting up, you get a banner at the top and you swipe it away and it goes to voicemail or you tap on it and it answers the phone, whatever. But it would mean that Apple understands that they're not selling people a phone that does other stuff anymore. They understand that they're selling a computer that can also take phone calls. Yeah. And that, to me, sounds like a very different approach.
Yeah, because that approach is similar to what happens on the iPad. I mean, you can select an option to answer calls on other devices, but on the iPad, you can. That's what it is. It's a banner. You can choose to answer it from there or swipe it away.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? I thought my iPad, the whole screen got taken over when a call came into my phone and I had answer on other devices enabled. Like I thought it was a very modal thing, just like the phone.
It maybe is.
Yeah.
I don't have that option on my
phone. Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same thing. It looks like the phone. It's just a much bigger thing. It's like, oh, here we are. I was typing a thing, but I guess we'll... That's cool.
On your computer, it does. On your computer, it comes up in a notification, just like a notification center. And it just shows you, hey, phone's ringing.
But on the iPad, it's very much that modal. And by modal, I mean, this is now a new mode that your phone is or device is in. And you know, it's not where you used to be.
Yeah. Your phone's ringing. We're doing this. Yeah.
And you're stuck in it. Yeah. You're not, there's no dismissing it or ignoring it. You can work to dismiss it by taking actions, but you can't just say, oh, it's a notification. I'm going to keep typing whatever I was typing. Yeah. I think Apple needs to do this. It very much goes against what the iPhone originally was fundamentally. I mean, Steve Jobs was very adamant because he was a Trio user, right? And he experienced how difficult it was to get the Trio to a point of stability. It wasn't impossible, but it was for most people not a reality.
And this is true.
And it meant that, you know, you could get a phone call and your phone would crash. You could be on a phone call and your phone would crash. You could be doing nothing and your phone would crash. I was able to get my Trio to a blissful state, but it was because I was a decades old geek, you know, like
it's not a thing
effort
that people could do. Yeah,
no, even for me, it was like, okay, well, if I'm going to add one thing to it, like I need to rethink everything because I've just disrupted the stasis of this device. And obviously Steve Jobs didn't want that. He didn't want that so much that his solution was no third party apps, right? There was a day. In fact, there was an entire year where those were not a thing. Yeah. And then people made them a thing with jailbreaking and here we are with the App Store and it's all embraced by Apple, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, the iPhone was supposed to be a reliable phone that also was this smart web browsable device.
Right.
And obviously our use of it generally, I know in fact, I know quite a few people that use their phones mostly to make phone calls. But you're right that like, that's not the majority. And Apple has yet to take an action that truly embraces that shift. Mm-hmm. But that shift has happened.
Oh yeah. Like
and that's the thing. It's
like, when it came out, you know, everybody made phone calls on it because what else do you do? Like, you know, that screen was huge.
What your devices
remember?
Did. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That massive original iPhone and you know, who's going to carry that around? It's so big. Yeah. Right. That was a real conversation people had. I just want to keep reminding people that the first iPhone, people went, who would carry that thing around? It's massive. So that to me is the interesting thing about it, because Apple's position has evolved on certain things, you know,
definitely,
you know, remember there
store,
was,
for example,
you don't need a stylus. You have 10, right? The App Store. Yeah. Web apps are good enough. Well, no. You know, making the iPad, which is an evolution of the phone in a different way, and all of the stuff that we have seen shift and change over time. And I feel like this is the next evolution, is figuring out that what people mostly do with their phones is generally not making phone calls. And
yeah, true.
And especially like when you add to that the insult and injury of it being a robocall in the first place, like, yeah, if you're taking right. over my entire screen, there's no escape. And I know that you're only calling me to tell me that my social security number expired. Like, I'm now just even extra aggravated at the phone. So it should be a thing that I'm able to, you know, dismiss easily, and it shouldn't interfere with whatever it was I was already doing. That would be great. So you can read more about that on Mac Observer. Yes, Andrew.
Yeah, I think the sentence I'm going to use is, I glared at my phone in impotent rage.
You could have taken it and smashed it, Andrew. Like, there was one action you could take. That's
true. It would be a really expensive action, but you could take it.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's possible. Yeah. Probable? Yep. No. Possible? Yes.
Realistic? No. Responsible? Definitely not. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You chose wisely, my friend.
You can hear more about that. Well, you can read more about that on MacObserver.com when Andrew and I have that up. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. In the meantime, I'd like to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad I'm working now.
Yes, everything's back to normal. We don't have to be on the phone anymore.
Yeah, I don't sound like I'm inside of a tin can anymore.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm glad we got you out from the bottom of the well where you recorded from yesterday. And Dave Hamilton, thanks for being here.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm working too. Thanks for having me.
And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.